Chapter 62. Lantano Garawashi led his bloodied, exultant men out of the caves that had let them pass through the mountains. 200 sleeping Caladorans had filled the last chamber. Their 4 witches had slept deepest in the cave, probably thinking it the safest place, and died before the alarm had even gone up. The rest of the Caladorans, disoriented, managed to kill as many of themselves as Garawashi's men had. In the pre-dawn light, the Sasirai emerged southeast of Pavil's Grove. 2 armies camped opposite each other on the plain. It surprised Garawashi that it was the Caladorans who'd been in the caves. Fighting on their home territory, it should have been the Siorans who had reserves hidden there. If this cave was a sample, the God King could easily have another 5,000 men tucked out of sight, deployable within 10 minutes. It was almost enough to make Garawashi turn back. Unless the Siorans had better tricks up their sleeves, it looked like Calador was going to be Siora's northern neighbor permanently. Still, this would be the last battle of the season. If he could see the outcome, Garawashi would know if the rebels would be able to regroup or if they were wiped out. He would see Caladoran tactics firsthand, which might save him in the future. "Have the men fan out," he told his balding captain, Otaru Tomaki. He stepped to the entrance of the cave, binding in the 4 forelocks of black hair he'd taken with the quick precision of long practice.
"You won't believe our luck, War Master," Tomaki said.
Garawashi cocked an eyebrow.
"Sir, he's right here," Tomaki pointed.
Barely 300 paces away through the trees, Garawashi saw the giant running up a hill toward the battlefield. He was heading for the Cenarian camp. He looked over his shoulder. For a moment, Garawashi couldn't see why because of the trees. Then, 4 Caladoran cavalrymen burst from the trees up the hill. The giant saw that he wasn't going to make the crest of the hill before they caught up with him. He stopped and drew his sword.
"The gods have delivered him into my hand," Garawashi said. "After he kills the horsemen, we'll see if this giant's a match for Lantano Garawashi."
"You secure the tunnel to the castle," Kylar whispered. "When they come after me, we'll need to move fast."
"What are you going to do?" Vi whispered.
They were bringing out another prisoner. This one shuffled forward like a lamb.
"Just go,"
Kylar whispered.
"I'm not your fucking lackey,"
Vi said, raising her voice to a dangerous level.
"Well then, you do what you have to do,"
Kylar said. Vi glared and went. Kylar waited while the Meisters argued briefly and then cut the prisoner's clothes off him to make him easier to digest. Kylar had an idea of what to do, but everything had to be in place. That meant waiting so Vi could secure the tunnel. It meant letting the prisoner die. He hated it, but he waited.
"Damn it, man, fight! That will give me all I need."
But the naked prisoner did nothing. He stared at the writhing mass on the gold altar with horror.
"Why don't you fight? All they can do is kill you."
At the last moment, the man let out a strangled sob and tried to stand, but the rope around his neck yanked him forward. He stuck to the creature and screamed. The chanting rose again, and Meisters who weren't chanting from the corners of the Lodrakari Star watched wide-eyed as the prisoner was devoured. This time, it was even faster than before. Kylar fully cloaked himself, the Kakari whooshing over his skin like a well-worn tunic. He ran toward the altar, right past a chanting Meister. As he stepped into the circle circumscribing the Lodrakari Star, his skin burned with the potency of magic in the air.
Kali's voice shrieked through him, a voice of despair, of suicide, of shame, of corruption. Another step, and he jumped, flipping his body into a no-handed cartwheel over the altar and the creature chained to it. It was like jumping through lightning. Needles jabbed every surface of his skin, injecting every vein with power. As he passed over the creature's misshapen gray head, he grabbed the diamonds. They slid out as if the creature's skin were butter. He landed on the other side of the altar and flung the diamonds away like burning coals. In another second, he was out of the star and leaping for the wall, which was inscribed with runes and designs cut deep enough that he could cling to them. Whatever happened next, he was content to get the hell out of the way and watch invisibly. Eyes flicked open around the star. The creature was still devouring the prisoner, but the Meister's magic hung in the air like the dangling tentacles of a jellyfish. It had nowhere to go. The chanting Meisters broke off, one by one. Every one turned toward Kylar and stared, mouth agape as if seeing the impossible.
They can see me.
Kylar clung to the wall like a spider, facing out, his hands and feet wedged in cracks behind him, waiting for the first attack. The silence was broken by the sound of a snapping chain and a throaty, almost human roar. The creature, long-backed now like an enormous caterpillar, shook itself, and the rest of the chains popped like roasting corn. Kylar was forgotten. Standing on 6 human arms, the creature rushed a Meister and trampled him. 6 arms and hands tore the Meister apart and stuck his limbs to its body. The little mouths worked better than any glue. A fireball caromed off the beast's hide. It wasn't so much blocked as redirected. The fireball lost no momentum, did no damage. 3 more fireballs followed on the next moment, each flying away and bursting against the walls or the floor. The Meisters shrieked. One ran up the stairs that spiraled out of the depths. The creature ran after her, but instead of following her up the stairs, it cut across the circular hall. It tried to grab her. She fell back against the wall, as far away from the grasping hand as she could get. It was far enough. At that height, the creature's arm couldn't reach her. She started scurrying back up the stairs on her hands and feet. Kylar thought she was going to get away, but then the creature slumped. Its arm legs sagged. Under the surface of its skin, long arm bones slid, one after another, to the arm reaching for the woman. The hand detached and slid forward, each section locking with the sticky, sucking sound of a joint being dislocated and relocated. In no time, the arm had added 4 more arm lengths. The creature grabbed the woman and pulled her onto itself. Her screams became muffled burbles. The creature rounded and crushed 3 more Meisters against the wall. It paused as all its little mouths chewed through their clothing and flesh. A 4th witch grabbed one of the 3 by the hand, trying to pull her free. He put a foot on the creature's hide to get leverage, but even though the creature didn't seem to notice, it was as if its very skin was possessed of intelligence, or at least insatiable hunger. The Meister hadn't pulled for a second when his eyes bulged. He threw himself backward, but his foot stuck to the creature's hide. He landed on his back, screaming. For a second, it looked like he might pull free, at the cost of all the meat on his foot. One flank tremored, the way a horse's flank twitches to rid itself of flies. And in a wave, the toothy skin lapped up over the Meister's foot, up to his ankle. Another twitch, and it reached up to mid-calf. Another, and the creature was digesting 4 Meisters. It was all the break Kylar needed. He launched himself off the wall and ran up the south tunnel toward the castle. He passed 4 bloody Meisters that Vi had dispatched on the way. He found Vi rifling through the purse of a dead guard, standing in front of a formidable oak door. He smiled recklessly. She looked at him, wide-eyed.
"Shit, Kylar, you're glowing!"
"I was amazing back there," he said, forgetting that he should have been invisible.
"No, I mean, shit! Kylar, you're glowing!"
Kylar looked down. He looked like he was on fire, all in purples and green in the magical spectrum, and in a dull forge-fire red in the visible spectrum. No wonder the Meisters had been staring. He'd jumped through the heart of all their magic, and it had been too much for the Kakari to devour. It was bleeding excess magic, as light. Without thinking, he tried to suck the Kakari back in. It was like taking a belly full of hot lead into his Glorvurden. Ow! Ow!
"Did you kill it?" Vi asked.
Kylar looked at her like she was crazy.
"Didn't you see what that thing did?"
"No, I obeyed my orders and secured the tunnel."
Vi, Kylar realized, could be a real snot. Not that it does a whole hell of a lot of good because there's no key. They must have been afraid of that thing, she mimicked.
"Now we're going to have to go back. I'd recommend sneaking, but you seem to be on fire."
Kylar pushed past Vi and put his hands on the near edge of the oak door, one above the other.
"What are you doing?" she asked.
Gods, the door was thick. Still, if he couldn't take the magic in, why couldn't he channel it out? He felt the whoosh of magic leave him. He looked down and saw tunnels the exact size and shape of his hands bored through the foot-thick oak and iron hinges. Swallowing, "How the hell did I do that?" Kylar pushed on the door. It didn't budge until he used talent strength. Then it yawned open, twisting on its locks, then crashing to the floor. Kylar stepped through. When Vi didn't follow, he turned. She had an expression on her face so stunned and puzzled and eloquent. He knew exactly what she was going to say.
"What the hell are you?" Vi asked. "Hugh never taught me anything like that. Hugh doesn't know anything like that."
"I'm just a wet boy."
"No, Kylar. I don't know what you are. But you're not just anything.